Nomine Patris, et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Ave Maria, gratia plena, Dominus tecum, benedicta tu in mulieribus, et benedictus fructus ventris tui, Iesus.
Sancta Maria, Mater Dei, ora pro nobis peccatoribus, nunc et in hora mortis nostre. Amen.
Nomine Patris, et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Brother in Christ, laudato Iesus Christus in saecula. This is Timothy Flanders with the meaning of Catholic. Jesus is King. Today I'm joined by Rafael X. Gonzalez. Rafael, yes. How you doing, brother?
Good. Good to see you. Thanks for inviting me, Tim. X for Xavier.
So. Yes. Saint Francis Xavier.
Yes.
Excellent. Wonderful. So Rafael Xavier Gonzalez studied theology, philosophy, Latin, and Greek in two seminaries, one in Spain and the other in Peru, specializing in Thomism, Suarism, and Molinism. He has lectured at various parishes and centers on approved Marian apparitions. Rafael is also a veteran of the Iraq War. He is currently a teacher in a classical liberal arts high school and an adjunct professor of philosophy. And you're doing your dissertation currently. What's the subject of the dissertation and where is that at?
Yes. So, they say a doctorate, to get a doctorate and a doctorate in tenacity early, pretty much, because you just have to persevere. But it's on, I'm pretty much halfway done. My topic is on Suarez, which is the discussion of today. And just talking about his metaphysical notions, where does that fit in with the organic development of doctrine? And how that can really give us a more profound sense, a Christological sense, especially the metaphysics of the modes. If I get really into it, some people, maybe be like, oh, this is kind of above my head. But it's very interesting. I'm doing like a little bit of a historical, run through how metaphysical concepts are applied in order to really enrich our theology, because our theology is always progressing, under the vigilance of the church, of course, and how the metaphysics, right, of the modes, these notion of the modes, how they can enrich a knowledge of a Christological knowledge. So.
Excellent.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yeah, I only understood half of what you said, but we'll get into
some of that.
It's
actually better that way. So,
So we're doing Suarism today, and the Doctor Eximius, which means the most excellent doctor, the excellent doctor, who is Francisco Suarez. And this is a man and his work which is very much not known to the Anglosphere. Yeah. In fact, I was just preparing a little bit for the show, reading the entry in the New Catholic Encyclopedia, and the entire bibliography for both Suarez and Suarism, none of it was in English. It was kind of funny. So we'll talk about why that is. But this is part of a larger series of Meaning of Catholic about against the error, which we colloquially call no salvation outside Thomism. And this is an error that especially arose before the Second Vatican Council. And the Second Vatican Council was very much a reaction to that error, an overreaction in many ways.
Right.
But this is something that we need to understand a lot better if we're really going to understand what's going on in our current Catholic crisis. And at Meaning of Catholic, one of our mission statements is to restore the rival schools of Christendom. And so that means Thomism, obviously, is one of the most dominant schools, at least in the Western Church. But of course, there's all the Eastern traditions as well, we've also covered Scotism on some other shows. We'll also have coming up later, God willing, I want to get the Franciscan perspective on Vatican II, which is interesting. Mm. Dr. Matthew Minard will be coming on in March to talk about this sort of neo-scholastic period, which causes this overreaction as well. So we'll be getting into that. So Suarism, I'd like to first, Rafael, start about, give the audience a historical context about what makes Suarism so unique. As I said, he's very much lesser known in the Anglosphere, but he is very much so. In general terms, Thomism is generally the school of thought of the Dominicans. Scotism or Bonaventure is generally the school of thought of the Franciscans, and Suarism is generally, though not officially, the school of thought which is dominant among the Jesuits, perhaps until recent times when the Jesuits have fallen from wherever they're at these days. I don't know, but the classical Jesuits, you know, are very much Suarism. So, can you give us some of the historical context of Suarez, and he comes in on the scene here. Can you give us some of the historical background?
Yeah, so definitely. I mean, he's born 1548, dies 1617. During the, you know, the golden age of neo-scholasticism, which definitely, you know, Spain is at the forefront here. Spain is here, and, you know, there was kind of a sort of, you can see they were kind of despised as the Spanish intellectuals, and they were kind of seen as vulgar brutes. So I think that's one of the reasons why Suarez is not really known among, especially among the English speaking world. I mean, his work was used for 40 years throughout Europe, the Metaphysical Disputations, that's the translation in English. It was used in all the universities of Europe. So how can, you know, a man who wrote that work be so forgotten? It's kind of interesting. So it's funny because Suarez didn't, this might be an exaggeration on his part, but he thought himself a Thomist, right? He definitely had the spirit of St. Thomas in the sense of he was a synthesizer, right? He was able to synthesize new philosophies that came out, because again, he's centuries after St. Thomas, and he's able to incorporate them. So he doesn't follow by any means, you know, the argument of authority in philosophy, the Magister Dixit argument, which many, as you said, you know, these really dogmatic Thomists follow. Thomas said this, therefore that's the way it is. And of course, you know, we have to be careful here because, yes, you know, most of us just want to follow, right? We want to follow these huge intellectuals, but God does sometimes call these immense intellects that he himself has given these people to kind of divert and progress and change and make better. So there's a radical Suarez who said, you know, this is controversial, but what St. Thomas did with Aristotle, Suarez did with St. Thomas, but I think he was talking about the method. I think he was talking about regarding the method, because Suarez, again, considering himself as a Thomist, he's primarily a theologian, not a philosopher, as the same as St. Thomas. He's going to incorporate, he's going to also be in the realm of nominalism, right? Scotism and nominalism. So he's going to be the media via, right? The middle path between Scotism and Thomism. So St. Thomas, there's not a doubt that, you know, the conservative Platonic view of the Middle Ages during St. Thomas's time, that was the predominant view in Christendom. Philosophical view, right? You know, St. Augustine, St. Bonaventure, and even Scotus later after St. Thomas. So that was the predominant view. So with Aristotle coming along, there's this interest of, I hate to use this word, naturalist bent. There's an interest of naturalism in the sense that, you know, let's see things for what they are. You know, let's focus more on this reality. Like, why are we seeing everything? Like, why are we defining fire purely as a referent to something divine, right? Which is more of the Platonic mindset, more of the mystical mindset. People wanted a more down-to-earth type of philosophy, and Aristotle provided that. He was the new thing, right? And obviously, Thomas Aquinas wasn't looking for novelty, but he saw the truth in Aristotle, and is very much focused on nature, on physicality, if you will. I'm translating some words from English to Spanish. So, you know, a Suarist will accuse Thomas of fisicidad, which means physicality, too much physical. So now with Suarez, it's kind of giving a more of a supernaturalized, if you will, a more of a metaphysical bent. And a clear example of this is, you know, the proof of God, one of the fundamental principles of St. Thomas, which he takes from Aristotle, is that everything that is moved by something else. He uses that principle from the physics of Aristotle to prove the existence of God. Ultimately, the first mover is God. But then Suarez is going to say, wait a minute, why does it have to be like that? In fact, if that principle were true, it seemed like human liberty could not exist, right? Am I not the ultimate mover of my free acts? So Suarez kind of changed that principle to say everything that is made by something else. So he gives it a metaphysical twist, right? It's getting out of this naturalist kind of view and more metaphysical, more spiritualized. But at the same time, very staunchly Aristotelian. So it's interesting. Suarez has like both extremes. And he's a synthesizer, and the truth is in the synthesis. It's very interesting. And also in the methods. The method is crucial here because, you know, St. Thomas's times, you know, the 13th, 14th century, you see that the commentary method was the principal way that, you know, many pursued their degrees. They just wrote a commentary on, first it was this, the Sententiae, of Peter Lombard, and then the Summa Theologica replaced that of St. Thomas Aquinas. So and Suarez even participated in that. But the problem, well, not the problem, actually something good that was born of that was all these new questions arose, right? That Thomas did not deal with, right? He did not deal with. So this proves that there is progress here.
Yeah. Look, I wanted to frame that because it's really interesting what you said about the strict Suarez, what he said about Suarez, because I just made me think of the fact that, like you said, the church fathers are all Neoplatonists. They're not Aristotelians. Yeah. That's the dominant philosophy of the church fathers and Augustine and Bonaventure and Scotus. But there also comes along Maimonides, who's a Jew, and we also have Avicenna and Verrues, who are both taking actually what was taken over by the Syriac Christians over in the Persian and Mohammedan Empire, translating it into Arabic, and then in response to these things in particular, with Aristotle being more prominent, St. Thomas creates this synthesis, which is the new thing. But then what's parallel to that, so interesting, is that after Thomism and Scotism, there's a decline of scholasticism called nominalism. And that is really the forerunner to Protestantism. Now, nominalism is an overreaction to a problem because there is this decadence because it's becoming way, way too abstract. So nominalism is trying to bring things down to earth more, but it's denying universal principles. So Suarez comes along and he's able to then take all this and then respond to nominalism. You know, obviously Thomism and Scotism cannot respond to nominalism because they're just chronologically prior. I want to read this quote from, and then have you respond to all that. This is from the New Catholic Encyclopedia entry on Suarez. It says this, quote, Suarez's philosophy was a personal interpretation of perennial philosophy. He drew on the common heritage of epistemological, cosmological, anthropological, and metaphysical doctrines, and at the same time developed a new concept of being as the object of metaphysics. Negatively, his system may be characterized by his rejection of the realistic application of the teaching on potency and act to being, of Scotist formalism, and of nominalist conceptualism. But then, as you pointed out, he takes Thomas on some things, Scotus on some things, he even takes the nominalist on some things, and then he makes his own ideas on other things. So tell us about this response to nominalism and the synthesis.
Well, what you said there, it's interesting that really Thomas builds on Aristotle. He really doesn't have his independent systematic philosophical, you know, doctrine apart from Aristotle, and he does mostly restrict himself to commentary in philosophy. So he follows Aristotle very closely. In that regards. But in with nominalism, it's interesting. A lot of people accuse Suarez of being a nominalist, and there is he does take, it's interesting, Suarez is able to see the good and the bad. So this is not, you know, it's a, you know, purification of certain elements, as is done before. So it's, Suarez is able to, this focus on the concrete, right? The first thing that we know, as Thomas would say, the first thing that we know is being. It is the notion of being. But Suarez say, no, the first thing we know is, are the concrete things themselves. So it's really interesting. He's going to allow being to dictate his principles, not the principles to dictate being. That's the essential difference with him and nominalism. Nominalism is, you know, the principles are dictating reality. No, it's reality is going to dictate to me how I should, you know, form my principles. So you know, it's also epistemological type of view, you know, the philosophy of knowledge. I really don't want to get into it too much, so or maybe I could simplify it a little bit, but Suarez believes that we directly, the intelligence alone, we don't need to have like sense knowledge then to intellectual knowledge. The intellect itself is capable of directly knowing concrete things without the sensible image. So really, Suarez is a type of immediate realism as opposed to the mediate realism of mediate without an immediate realism of Thomism. But Suarez, you know, another of the questions is the questions of the universals, right? What essentially are the universals for Suarez? And he does, in a sense, and this goes to those who accuse him of nominalism, he doesn't have them as real as St. Thomas does. He makes a distinction with the essences. He talks about metaphysical essence and physical essence. You know, actually, you know, Thomas would talk about that the universals exist in the particular. But for Suarez, the universals exist with their foundation is in reality, but they formally exist in the mind. He doesn't. So it's, you know, it's kind of parting the hair, right? As they say in Spanish, partiendo el pelo, cutting the hair. It's an interesting, you know, distinction here, but he is not nominalist by any degree, right? He definitely believes he's a realist. He believes that objective reality is the basis of philosophy. And, you know, some people accuse Suarez as, you know, they accuse him of being an idealist, essentially, phenomenology with this idealist bent. But phenomenology can be a good and legit philosophy if it's a supplemental philosophy to metaphysical realism. And that's what Suarez does. So Suarez does have a subjective bent, but he's firm on metaphysical realism. So he does talk about concepts like the formal concept. There's an objective concept, which is, you know, there's a real content to that concept. It's objective concept.
So, thought here. You might want to. Yeah, well, let me ask you to speak on what seems to be his most famous work. He has what was it? So, I mean, one of the reasons historically why he's lesser known is because of the historical animosity between the heretical Anglican Empire and the Spanish Empire, for one thing. But Suarez actually joined in with St. Robert Bellarmine against King James I, who was positing divine right monarchy. But there's also the extensive volumes of his work. There was 23 volumes or 28, I think I read in the article. And I don't think any, I don't know, has any of it been translated into English? I think it's all Latin or Spanish, right?
There's still, yeah, because I knew Suarez, you know, reading Spanish and Latin. English, there's very few. They're still trying to translate the Metaphysical Disputations. There's a scholar, a very young scholar, Sidney Penner, who is he's working on with my PhD director, who's Alfredo Fredoso. I always call him Alfredo. It's like his last name is Italian. He's also Suarez, who's translating Suarez. So really, these works are not translated. The majority of his works are not translated into English. So it's right. Yeah.
So and everybody's lost Latin, so they can't read anything. Sadly. So tell us about one of his most famous work, which is the Metaphysical Disputations. So tell us about what is that work? What makes that so unique? That was, as you said, that was respected by Protestants at the time. Even they thought it was great. They started teaching that in their universities as well, which is pretty remarkable for the Protestants of those days, who literally said that the Pope was the Antichrist. You know, so it was so good. So tell us about that work.
Yeah. So actually, Suarez, he was writing a commentary, a Christological commentary on the third part of St. Thomas's Summa Theologica. And while he was writing that work, he realized that he really had to address some metaphysical questions. So he decided to interrupt, right, the commentaries that he was writing and to delve into this metaphysical work. And it's a massive work. It's a massive work. So it's really interesting how Suarez, his method is so new, and a lot of people criticize him for this. It's an independent metaphysical work, and in many ways, some people see it as a separation of metaphysics from theology, right? Because he does his metaphysical work, and you know. He starts off saying, and this is really impressive, that you really can't do theology without having a firm basis in metaphysics, right? And that is really, that's a wake-up call. Like, you can't be a theologian if you don't know metaphysics. Metaphysics is crucial, and he realized that while he was doing his Christological commentary. So he writes this massive work. It is very orderly, not like the metaphysics of Aristotle is kind of, you know, it's not as orderly. Some people say it's a mess, or the work First Philosophy, because as we know, it's not called metaphysics originally. So he writes this work, which is a massive systematic work, which is amazing, his erudition. He incorporates all these philosophers. Obviously, number one, he mentions Aristotle, second, St. Thomas Aquinas, then the Blessed Dylan Scotus, third. So it's really a system which he kind of, it's not the Cartesian method, right? Where you're starting from zero, by no means. But in the sense that it's independent, we can say that it is more like the modern philosophy in that sense, that it's independent, it's very systematic, and it doesn't base itself, solely on the commentary method. If you will, I just want to mention, with the commentary method, all these different questions arose. For example, so this wasn't something new. Like with Cajetan, when he was doing this commentary method, certain ideas of grace, right, came to mind. Right, what does Thomas believe regarding grace? So he did. Right, he started writing another work, Cardinal Cajetan, also around the same time. So really doing this commentary method provides one to kind of, delve deeper into these mysteries and do another work. And actually just mentioning that what I did about grace, this whole, the whole polemic of De Auxiliis came from, the commenting on St. Thomas and the Thomists saying this is what St. Thomas believed. St. Thomas didn't say anything explicitly about, if grace is intrinsically efficient or extrinsically efficient. And then you have the Jesuits saying, they're defending something else, and each are accusing one another of heresy. But I just want to point out also that Thomism is not always the same as the doctrine of St. Thomas, right? I think we established that at the beginning, but yeah.
There's probably more forms of Thomism than there are forms of any other school of thought. Sure. There's so many different forms of that. So when I was talking to Father Christian Kappas about Scotism, he pointed out that when Pius X put forth his Thomistic theses, It was quite a job to even define that as Thomism, because Thomas changed his mind on a few things, but then there's also different additions and schools of thought within Thomism. But then apparently it was the Jesuits who at the time did not allow that to be totally imposed, because they had Suarist ideas. And I wanted to mention this from the article as well. So the Dr. Eximius, the title Dr. Eximius, excellent doctor, was given to him by Pope Paul V, Alexander VII, Benedict the 14th, great Pope of the 1700s, as well as Pius XII. So, but he's never been, so he's sort of an uncanonized doctor. It's kind of like Duns Scotus before Duns Scotus was beatified.
No, that's how it is. And I think a lot of it has to do with he's really the founder of Mariology as a science. He really, because I mean, his works are very, you know, they have that really strong scholastic method of analysis and order. So, I mean, even Louis Grignon de Montfort and St. Alfonso Liguori, they mentioned him in their A True Devotion to Mary and in the Glories of Mary, respectively. They mentioned Suarez, because Suarez is held in high esteem, right? And even in the solemn profession, and it's the definition of the Assumption in 1950, Pius XII did mention Suarez. So Suarez is really, you know, he's really amazing. He's actually the first one to say that Mary, in her initial grace, surpassed the grace of all created beings, of all creatures, of all men and angels. So, you know, it's really interesting how he, in his De Mysteriis Vitae Christi, with commentary on the Christology of Thomas, how he argues, right, the theme of Mary's sanctification, right, Mary and her initial sanctification. He gives arguments for her virginal integrity. So it's, you know, the grace is how Mary merits, right? So it's really, he's the father of Mariology considered. Yeah.
Here's a question. MT says, what does he mean Suarez's assertions as a direct, unmediated realist without sensory knowledge?
Yeah, like the intellect alone, and this is actually an interesting question in Suarez, where he says that, so we do believe that the soul can exist without the body, but the soul can't function without the body's common principle. But he would say that the soul really is knowledge, is hindered by the body in a way. So the soul, the intellect, has the capacity to immediately know and penetrate the object. So it's as if the body is a natural hindrance. And this is kind of controversial. I think even Suarez was kind of just playing around here, trying to see where he can go with this. He didn't, you know, affirm something definitively, but we exist without our bodies, in a way, regarding knowledge. We know better. The soul, is capable of directly knowing. So this is, you kind of see this illumination too, Augustinian illumination in a sense, where, he does believe in a natural sense that, you know, the senses through knowledge, but he doesn't believe that you construct, what you call the phantasm, the sense image, and through the sense image, sense knowledge passes through intellectual knowledge. Right. It's like a bridge. The sense image is the bridge between the senses and the intellect. That's Thomism. But Suarez just goes the intellect right to the thing. Right. So it's, that's pretty much all. I mean, even Suarez is kind of there, you know, not sure himself, but it's okay. More of an immediate knowledge of the concrete.
Okay. All right.
That's kind of
What are some of the common objections to Suarism? There's one person in the chat is talking about his philosophy, his idea of being, and his epistemology. He's saying gnoseology. I'm not sure if that's what is being referred to, but what are some of the objections to Suarism, and what are your thoughts on those?
He definitely has a subjective bent. I mean, there's no doubt he talks about, you know, the objective concepts. What are the nature of those objective concepts? He doesn't give them a reality, you know, like Plato does. But there is an objective concept. The objective is, it's extramental in a sense, not in his being in so much as his content, that they are, you know, there's formal concepts, which is my notion of something. Then there is actual notions of things. So there's this subjective bent, and a lot of people automatically want to accuse Suarez of idealism. Now, it's fine to have a subjective bent, you know, phenomenology, again, as a supplemental philosophy, you can have that if you have the basis of realist metaphysics. As long as you say a reality exists, I can know it, you know, you can build philosophy from that. You know, phenomenology has, we talked about this, has this idealist trend, and then it has its realist trend also. Von Hildebrand, you know, different phenomenologists. So, you know, you can talk about the subjective in a way. You could talk about the phenomenon, but once you identify that with metaphysical reality, then it becomes idealist. And that's not what Suarez does at all. But that's what people accuse him of. They also accuse him of kind of being, they don't like his method of writing a whole, you know, work based on metaphysics. You know, they accuse him of being Cartesian in the sense that they think he's starting from scratch. He really isn't. I mean, he's starting from scratch physically, but he's an eclectic, you know, it's eclecticism, right? It's a sound eclecticism in Suarez. And that's the Thomistic spirit.
Yeah, it's really the it's really following the method of Thomism,
right?
Not just repeating Thomas or sort of just commenting on Thomas, as you said, saying that Thomas is the authority. So we're just gonna, what did Thomas say? It's really imitating what did Thomas actually do, and Suarez is actually doing the same thing that Thomas did.
Right.
Excellent. Is there now? What about his philosophy and metaphysics, or what does he say about liberty? That seems to be a big contribution. Talk about his thoughts on liberty.
Yeah, now liberty, I mean, it's liberty is essential for the Jesuits. Their defense of liberty, actually, when the Dominicans read it, they were like, oh, they were thinking this is heretical. They were upset, but they were defending liberty in front of the Protestant denial of liberty. So their liberty, you know, Suarez is going to focus on a libertarian notion of liberty in the sense that obviously true liberty is liberty for the good, right? You're truly free when you do the good. That's true. But he also, and we're getting a little bit into his political philosophy, liberty is a freedom of exercise. And that's important that we have, which is almost, I mentioned this to you before, it's a defect of liberty. It's really because of our original sin, but it's an important position that we're in now because of original sin, that we maintain this liberty of exercise. And the notion of liberty is very important. Obviously for marriage, the Thomists kind of talk about that we're predetermined and we're physically predetermined, but God moves us in a physical predetermined way, causing our liberty. The Jesuits didn't like that. The Jesuits, right, based on Suarez and Molina, will talk about how God gives us a simultaneous concourse. So from all eternity, God agreed to sustain, right, to sustain our acts. So God doesn't cause our free acts as free. So freedom is very much something that pertains to the individual. So God doesn't cause our acts as free. He causes them as being. So he gives a simultaneous concord, right? So, you know, it's kind of like grace and freedom. It's like, where does it, you know, it's essentially a mystery.
But yes,
you want to put emphasis on the freedom, and, you know, it is really important. Actually, St. Ignatius, when he was preaching, well, before when he was with his seminarians, he would tell them, talk more about freedom than of grace when you preach, because it's very important to motivate the people to act. You talk about their free will. The more you talk about grace, the more you could bring in some type of, complacent spirit, which I thought was interesting.
Well, that's certainly interesting considering the context, because there's literally a sexual revolution going on with the Protestants who are talking all about grace and the gospel, and they're having their little orgy, their little just complacency, degradation of the moral life because of the Protestant heresies. But it's interesting. Right. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the two extremes meet each other. So it's funny when you put so much emphasis on grace, then you end up falling into an absolute disordered notion of liberty. So it's like the two extremes meet always. And that you see that in Protestantism throughout its history.
Yeah. And so at the same time as this, you have in the lifetime of Suarez, you have the Huguenots in France and you have the Dutch Revolt, who are justifying their revolts in terms of liberty, quote unquote, but right. They're basically adopting ideas that are in the air, including Suarez's ideas of liberty, and they're just applying them to their own heretical notions of just revolt against papism and right. papist monarchs and whatnot. And then this gets picked up by the anti-monarchists, the parliamentarians in the English Civil War. You have Algernon Sidney taking Bellarmine, using him for his own ends. So these are being mixed with the heretics who want to just continue with their constant revolution. But I think what you're saying that's really great, that there is this doctrine of freedom against Martin Luther, his famous work against on the bondage of the will. That was what Erasmus identified as the key point, the key departure of Luther from the doctrine of the fathers, is this denial of free will.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, no, freedom is, the profound notion of freedom, to do the good. But again, this freedom of exercise also, I think Suarez talks a lot about this more superficial notion of freedom, which is necessary because of the state we're in. So yeah, it's a fascinating question. It's a fascinating question. That whole controversy, De Auxilis, is really fascinating, because it's really, putting so much emphasis on the omnipotence of God, as the Dominicans do with Bañez at the forefront, Domingo Bañez. The Jesuits kind of saw that as, how can you say that God predetermines and physically moves us? So the physicality, here we go with the physicality with the Thomists, right? There's physical causes. Like, that is a physical cause. They don't see that as a, as a guarantor of freedom. Really, the Augustinians will talk about a moral kind of God moves us morally. But the Thomists, just to salvage, and obviously not fall into heresy, they affirmed liberty, freedom. They would say that God causes the freedom as he goes in. But the Jesuits are saying, how is that possible? And interestingly, just a little as a side note, the Dominicans did believe in, there is predestination, Catholic predestination. And the predestination prior, God predestines prior seeing the merits, right? Now, you can't have a reprobation. That would be heresy, right? God cannot send anyone to hell prior to seeing their merits. That's total heresy. But God and Dominicans, right, at the time, and at that time, the Auxilis, at the time they expounded on this, God prior to the merits, he would predestine one to heaven. How is that possible, right, prior to the merits? That's interesting. They would call that negative reprobation. They would say, wait a minute, if God is predestining prior to, right, seeing the merits to heaven, then what about everyone else? It's like, you, yes, you. No. And apparently that's not that's not that's an opinion that one can hold in the church. Predestination prior to seeing the merits, right? Not reparation, that's heresy. But yeah, so it's
yes, yeah. The De Auxiliis is a very interesting coda to the Protestant revolt and the Council of Trent, which really defines so much against the Protestant heretics. But there are these little nuances that are not resolved at Trent, and this controversy continues, and the Holy See ultimately says, we're not going to resolve this. We're just going to leave this as a mystery. Some say it was because the Jesuits were doing so well, you know, and they didn't want to just clamp down on them, even though the Jesuit doctrine was so weird, say the Dominicans. But and then you have the Jansenists who arise, and, you know, they have, I don't know how much they were a reaction to. I know they hated the Jesuits, but the Jansenists are another problem entirely. I want to get at a few questions. Let's see. First, MT says, I understand how Suarez's idea of direct knowledge of nonsensical objects related to illumination from St. Augustine or intuitive knowledge in the sense of Cardinal Newman. Is that would that be a proper understanding of
Suarez?
Like
the illative sense. Yes and no. I think it's closer to the Augustinian view. The whole question is the phantasm that that bridges the senses and the intellect. He doesn't like that bridge, essentially. So that's what it comes down to. He doesn't like that bridge. It's almost something as that we know immediately. So I'm not sure the answer to that question. The illative sense of a Newman, is it? I think it could be. Yeah, that's an interesting PhD thesis, by the way. comparing the illative sense of Newman with the epistemology of Suarez. Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly.
Okay. Well, I got my friend Dr. Richard DeCluse in the chat. He's asking, what did Suarez contribute to the nature and grace discussion versus what did Cajetan say? You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So the grace is interesting. So the difference between efficient grace and sufficient grace is really how are they different, right? Sufficient grace doesn't give what you say. I'm sorry, some of these are I studied this in Spanish, so a lot of this I'm translating in English, so you have to forgive me here. They're really different according to the Thomists. They're really different, efficient grace and sufficient grace, and they depend totally on God. So it's like, wait a minute, God gives a sufficient grace and it's merely sufficient because of God. So really what the Jesuits say is that grace is extrinsically efficient, or it's extrinsically sufficient. It's the part of the man, right? So it's the man that accepting that grace, which is obviously the work of grace also. How do we explain that? It's a mystery ultimately. But it's man who accepts, who doesn't accept, who makes that efficient or merely sufficient. So that's really interesting in that sense. So grace, it moves us, right, in a more of a moral sense, right? It motivates us to do good, right? Because we retain our liberty. That's the important part of this. He wants to retain liberty. So it's a moral impulse, right? It's not a physical impulse. So ours is not like the physicality, right? It's a moral impulse, right? We can reject grace. How do you explain the Thomist rejection of grace? You can't explain that, right? They would ultimately have to say, well, God didn't send you an efficient grace, right? If the grace wasn't efficient, God didn't send you an efficient grace. No, you can reject grace because it's like a moral movement. So yeah, Suarez, contributes that, incorporating. And I think it's important to emphasize liberty and freedom in that sense, right? The freedom of yes or no, right? The freedom of in that sense, the freedom of exercise.
And this is a totally a side note, but this is the Eastern Orthodox objection to the doctrine of grace in the West, is that they think that created grace actually is against the divine union, basically. But really, divine created grace is about preserving liberty, and the debate in the West is all about it's all goes back to Augustine and the Pelagians. It's really been the big debate in the West for 2,000 years, even today with liberalism today as it stands. Here's another comment or question from MT. Does Raphael see any dangers in Suarez or misreading of him, any moves for his canonization?
There's always dangers with with a philosopher, especially misreading of him. And there are some, I don't know if you know Father Joseph Potersky, God rest his soul, I believe he passed away, Jesuit. And we had dinner together. He's the author of many books, speaker, university. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but and he's a Jesuit, so I assumed he was a Suarist. And I was talking to him, and I thought he was a Suarez, but at the end he said, no, I don't like Suarez at all. And the things he was telling me is Suarez, I was like, wait a minute, that's, Suarez doesn't say that. So in the end he told me, no, I kind of know this from secondary sources. So there is a huge misreading of Suarez. There is the tendency to give him, kind of like in phenomenology, which I think phenomenology has its problems also in itself, but that's another discussion. You can give this idealist bent. So again, talking about the subjective doesn't mean the subjective takes the primacy, by no means, right? And people think that. No, Suarez believes he's a metaphysical realist. So there's definitely, there's definitely dangers in misreading Suarez. Dangers in Suarez, I think there's dangers, I'm not sure. Dangerous sure. As far as himself. Yeah, I'm not
well,
sure.
I mean, I think
I'll be here defending Suarez. So.
Something that as a disciple of Dietrich von Hildebrand, I can relate to the problems with phenomenology and the misreading as well. But it seems that ultimately, nobody can predict the future. And sometimes something that you said in, 100 years ago in that context was fine, but then 100 years later, somebody takes that in a different context and it ends up being twisted or whatever.
Right.
So ultimately the context of every pious Catholic who dies in the bosom of the church is to submit your understanding to the judgment of the church and the tradition. And always read everything in continuity. One thing I wanted to try to boil everything down for non-philosophers like myself, because as I understand it, to a large degree, we can talk about Plato as sort of a subjective method towards objective truth, in terms of I just think about the concept of justice because I'm just sort of I'm in my head. I'm going into the Platonic forms, but it's an objective reality that I'm searching for. It's not relativistic at all. Whereas Aristotle's a lot more like materialistic in terms of I'm going to look outside myself. I'm going to start in an objective place. I'm going to look at this rock and I'm going to think about the nature of this rock and then go to the nature of being and all that. Would you say Suarez is one of the other of those? How does he kind of fit into that vulgar summation of philosophical methodology?
Yeah, definitely. That famous or infamous principle, you start with the idea, you end with the idea. It's really hard to, justify exterior reality once the idea is your, you start with the idea. So it's, he definitely doesn't start. He starts with objective reality and he's going to say, I'm going to follow Thomas, but where I see, I'm going to let being dictate, my principles, where I see that I can't hold a certain principle, I'm going to come up with a new principle, essentially. And it's not a rationalistic spirit. It's a spirit that is, it is rooted in authority, certain authorities, but not merely. But he also reasons for his position. I'll give you an example, like the principle of individuation, where easily St. Thomas just follows Aristotle and says, oh, it's just matter, right? The matter, they say signata quantitate, I think I'm messing up the Latin here, the matter, which as a, with this category of quantity, but really, so that's what makes something individualized, right? An angel, the problem is here is how is an angel individualized if it doesn't have an individual matter, right? And then Thomas would have to talk about that each individual angel is its own species, right? So he has to refer to something else. So Suarez, and this is his kind of Occam influence, the Occam's razor, is going to say, well, each entity is individual from its very entity, right? It's not from the material things, right? It's all entity kind of, it's oneness, its individuality proceeds from its entity, from its being. So it's, you know, he kind of simplifies that in a sense, as opposed to saying, you know, that matter is what, and again, it has to do with the notion of form. Form and matter. Suarez's form is different. So, if you want to know a philosopher well, it's good to know his terminology, which is different. Like, I mean, this happens with Kant. Kant has all these problems, but Kant, he has his own terminology. You know, he can use the same word, but could mean something else. But no, in the end, Suarez definitely he parts from objective reality, not from the idea. So the idea, the mere idea, he would say, is a formal concept. But the objective concept is from it are from the things, right? Like are from the things, the objective concept. So our ideas are based, our subjective ideas are based on objective concepts, which he parsed from. So,
okay. Here's Andrea. He says, this elimination of phantasmata is this not a way pointing to anthologism, immediate knowledge, does not sound like realism to me, and obviously Thomas would never accept that. So what are your thoughts on that objection?
Well, yeah, Thomas, well, I don't know what they mean by immediate knowledge, as they seem to be critiquing it, but I mean, you walk into a room, you know, those four chairs in the room, there's no mediator between you and those chairs, essentially. So again, Suarez is going by daily experience. We do immediately perceive things, right? I mean, that's just the way, and concrete things. I mean, look, when the baby is born, the baby doesn't start thinking of the concept of being. The baby starts seeing immediately concrete things, right? And we're almost passive, right? We're totally passive, and these things come at us in its immediacy. So I'm not sure what that they mean in that question. Again, that's just a criticism of the Thomism, which obviously in Thomism, you know, they believe in the immediacy. You have to believe in it because you can't deny, self-evident experience. But the explanation of it it seems like it's through the sense image. So when you explain it, it's like, oh my gosh, this whole process, it's more complex than Suarez in a way. And Suarez is complicated, but in a way it's very simplistic, very unifying, very, again, synthesizer.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's interesting because it's similar to the realist phenomenology of von Hildebrand when he talks about the experience giving you an immediate intuition about the reality of a thing.
Right.
And he would include non-material realities like justice, like just viewing a just act of another human being and having an intuitive knowledge that was just. In that sense, there's an experiential manifestation of objective truth that you should intuit.
Right. And that's very difficult to explain. In Thomism, you know, the self-evident principles, how do we know the principle of non-contradiction? It's almost like it's built in us already in a sense. So it's, you know, how can you not believe in the immediacy of knowledge?
Yeah, well, I certainly sympathize with it from my own sympathies, certainly. Excellent. Well, we've covered a lot of ground here. And if anybody has any other questions or objections, I really appreciate you explaining this as someone who doesn't read Spanish. And my Latin is certainly not good enough to read the Baroque Latin of Suarez. So this is something that I certainly cannot study myself. But this is also an important, the other importance of this is that part of the crisis in the church is in fact a disconnect with this period of scholasticism. You mentioned the term neo-scholasticism. It's also known as Baroque scholasticism or second scholasticism, which is figures such as Suarez, Bellarmine, Torquemada, Cayetan, people like that who are commenting on Thomas. They're bringing Thomas forward in a true progress of philosophy and theology. And part of what has happened in our own day was that there was an overthrow of the so-called commentators of this period in favor of going back to Thomas or going back to the fathers, which in itself is good, but without breaking that chain of transmission of both Thomas and Suarez and these different schools of thought. And now that everybody's lost Latin and nobody knows, you know, priests and theologians don't know Latin anymore. They can't even study these sources anymore. So it's very unfortunate. Here's Sciaquist says, why does Suarez deny the pure potency of matter? That's a nice technical question for you.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, others wouldn't deny that. Others wouldn't deny that Suarez did. So that's actually a question in Suarez that other people say he does believe in that. So there's some things even Suarez is not even sure. But the problem is that if something is purely potential, the thing is, what is something that's purely potential that's not actualized? It's really, and it's interesting because his notion of metaphysics is what exists and what can exist, right? But if something is purely possible, it means it's not going to be actualized. I mean, how can you even say that exists? Because existence for the Thomists is something that is enact or actualized. I'm not even sure if the Thomists believe in the existence of the pure potentiality of matter. And that's the problem with, for example, you know, with essence and existence, I didn't really want to get into it, but essence is potential and it's actualized by existence. But then what is something without its fundamental actualization, which is existence? It doesn't. How can it exist? Because exist is act, is a fundamental act. So, you know, but it's funny that person mentioned that because I've heard the opposite. I've heard that Suarez does believe in the existence of pure, the pure potency of matter. So, I'll just take the argument where if the existence is right, the fundamental act, how can it exist? Right. It's a contradiction of terms.
Excellent. Well, any English or Spanish sources that you could point viewers to or any final thoughts?
Yes. Well, definitely. If you want to read Suarez in a more, I would say, more faithful to the truth. Like a lot of these more modern Thomists, when they write about Suarez, they write about Suarez from what they have been taught or from other secondary sources. So I would read Father Jose Egin. He's, God rest his soul, I believe he passed away not too long ago, 10 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. Again, not in English. You really have to read in Spanish. Spanish opens up the world for you in Catholicism, and even, you know, in intellectual environment. You know, you have to read Suarez in Spanish. There hasn't been really a work in English that I've seen that really defends Suarez, and that's the reason why I'm doing my PhD thesis It's interesting because this this young scholar who I mentioned, Sidney Penner, who defends Suarez, is not a Catholic. So,
oh no,
yeah. So, but he's yeah. I don't. It might not be. You know, I take it for what it's worth. But yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But Suarez, definitely read him in Spanish, and you will get the true sense of Suarez. I was like Father Jose Egin, Hellin. If you could read in Spanish, great. Latin, even okay. Better. Even better.
Right.
But English, yeah, there's definitely excellent. A bias there.
Well, so we'll look for your English language, the first English language dissertation, hopefully published as a book someday, defending or giving us the true Suarez. Excellent. Well, I included a link to two articles that Raphael has published at 1 Peter 5. That's how I got connected with Raphael, which, in fact, in it's actually, to me, a very, very important article, which actually is defending Platonic philosophy in regards to the liturgy. And I thought the point that you made in this article is probably the least discussed, but the most important, one of the most important probably in this liturgical crisis that we're in. I loved what you said in that article. So go ahead and if you want viewers, click on the link below and you get some writings from Raphael at 1 Peter 5. And so we look forward to more of those. So without, if we don't have any more questions or thoughts, why don't I bring up my favorite Spanish painter of this period, Diego Velázquez, and we'll pray in our Father, and we'll end it out.
All right, very good.
And okay. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Pater noster, qui es in caelis, sanctificetur nomen tuum, adveniat regnum tuum, fiat voluntas tua, sicut in cielo et in terra.
Pane nostrum quotidianum da nobis hodie, et dimitte nobis debita nostra, sicut et nos dimittimus debitoribus nostris, et ne nos inducas in tentationem, sed libera nos a malo. Amen.
In nomine Patris, et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Jesus is King.